VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
My view on it is that people with a formal diagnosis of ADHD are canaries in the coal mine, that we've got a world, a digital world, where we've got Facebook and Instagram and these large corporations that are monetizing our eyeballs, and therefore they're trying to create clickbaity headlines and creating a technology world where it's very hard to actually do the things that we want to do. And this is a way of fighting back against those big corp surveillance capitalism, distraction-inducing technology, being able to actually figure out what do you want to achieve with your time and being very concentrated during your working hours.
Welcome to Think Business with Tyler, sharing our methods and strategies for success. Join in on our conversations with business owners as we highlight their triumphs and detail how they overcame the challenges they faced while continuing to grow and scale their business. It's time to think life, think success, and think business with your host, Tyler Martin.
Hey there, friends. Today on Think Business with Tyler, we're diving into the brilliant mind of Jeremy Nagel. He's shedding light on Focus Bear, his genius app tackling productivity in the ADHD and autism community. Buckle up for a candid chat where business meets personal life and inspiration meets innovation. You won't want to miss this one. Let's get started. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the Think Business with Tyler podcast show. How are you doing?
Really good. Great to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. You are, I believe it's Saturday morning where you're at right now. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I really appreciate you taking the time to spend your Saturday morning with me, at least. Could we start out with telling the audience and myself a little bit about what you do professionally and then maybe a little bit something personal about you too?
Yeah, sure. These days, I am wearing two hats. One of them is I am working as a product manager for Message Media, and that's an extension of the last business that I had. I sold it and I have stayed on in that role. And the other thing that I'm working on is my new business, Focus Bear, which is a work-life balance and productivity app for people who have ADHD and autism.
Very cool.
Personally, I am 35 years old. I live in Melbourne, Australia, and I'm married, and I like cross-country skiing and running.
Nice. Cross-country skiing. So, you know, I did that many years ago. How often do you cross-country ski?
I do it a fair bit in winter.
Okay.
Even though we don't have snow in Melbourne, there are some mountains relatively close by that I've got a little ski lodge membership that I go up. I spent 3 weeks there last year. I hope to do the same this year.
Oh, that's very cool. I've only done it I think three times, not many times, but it's one of the funnest things I've done. It's a lot easier than normal skiing, like downhill skiing. For some reason, my feet just won't go the right directions, but cross-country skiing is cool. It's kind of like a hiking, quasi-hiking type of skiing, kind of the best of both worlds. So it must be a lot of fun to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, so I wanted to start out with this exit that you had. Can you kind of take us through how you got to the point of exit? Maybe even start from the beginning. Like, what was the business about? I believe this is Smooth Messenger is the company that you exited from. What did that company do? And then was it always your goal to exit? I'd like to just hear the story behind it.
Sure. It started essentially 11 years ago. After graduating from uni, I stumbled into doing consulting work for Zoho CRM. I just randomly had a volunteer job where they needed someone to build a database, and I found Zoho Creator and I really liked it. And there weren't many people doing it at that point. So I started to develop a reputation. I was on Upwork originally as a freelancer. And then I started doing YouTube videos where I was doing how-to videos about how to do various things within Zoho. And that made me sort of a influencer within the Zoho space, even though it wasn't huge in terms of subscribers. I have 1,600 subscribers on YouTube, which sounds like nothing compared to, say, PewDiePie. But in the Zoho world, that is very meaningful. And a lot of people, if I go to Zoho events, people will come up to me and say, I watched your videos. That was so helpful. Thank you so much. And that was a really great lead source for me, that people would read my blog posts and watch my YouTube videos, and they would trust me. I had a lot of people offer me consulting work as a result of that. And then later, when Zoho released Zoho Marketplace, which is a bit like AppExchange for Salesforce, or Shopify has their own marketplace where independent developers can create apps and sell them on the Zoho Marketplace. I was one of the early vendors there. I had an extension prior to Smooth Messenger called Advanced Round Robin, which was just allowing organizations to allocate leads to their different salespeople. And that really gave me a taste for the power of subscription revenue. I realized that I liked it a lot more than consulting. I wasn't very good at running consulting businesses, but the software, the SaaS model was very appealing to me. I basically launched Smooth Messenger off a request from Zoho, where they had an existing plugin doing SMS within Zoho CRM and they couldn't maintain it anymore. So they gave me the listing and gave me the old code. And that was pretty useful because it meant that there was a pre-established market for it. And they were also sending leads my way. So it meant that it grew quite quickly. I had a lot of people who wanted to be able to send SMS out of Zoho CRM. And even though there were probably 15 other competitor apps on the marketplace, there were some UX things that were better about Smooth Messenger. We made it look a bit like the SMS interface on the phone. So that was intuitive for people. And I think also the fact that I had a presence in the Zoho community already, so partners trusted me and Zoho were referring leads my way, meant that it was able to outcompete some of the other extensions out there. We, over time, grew over 2 years, grew to the point where we had 500 businesses using it. I had a team helping me out. I didn't really have any intentions to sell it, but I got approached out of the blue on LinkedIn by a M&A person from Message Media. And they said that they'd bought a similar Salesforce app and were looking for a Zoho app. And it was a very surprising and really a feeling of being out of my depth when I got that message. But I ended up getting some advice and support to guide me through that process. It took a while, but eventually sold it in February 2022.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. I bridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com. I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
I ended up getting some advice and support to guide me through that process. It took a while, but eventually sold it in February 2022.
So I want to just kind of connect some dots here to make sure I understand it. So you did the YouTube channel, got 600 very concentrated type subscribers. And is that how your credibility became so strong with Zoho that they would say to you, hey, make this plugin or extension for us and almost kind of give you somewhat of an exclusive opportunity? Is that all just really from just having this YouTube channel and building the credibility in that space? Or did you also build a relationship with the Zoho people that allowed you to open that door?
Yeah, it was a combination of a few things. It was the YouTube channel. It was, I wrote a book about programming in Zoho, and that I shared that with partners and with some of the Zoho employees, and actually used that to train some of their staff. And I was an active participant in the Zoho forums. And they really valued that because it meant it took the load off their customer support team. So at one point, I was given this certificate as one of the Zoho community MVPs. And I think all of those things of being immersed and active in the ecosystem made them feel like I was someone that they could trust. And also the fact that I had built the advanced round robin extension, which was one of the early extensions on the marketplace. So they could see that I was capable of taking it over.
There's so many business lessons in that, in my mind, a little bit. It's, you know, having the niche audience. It's not about having this 10 million audience. It's about having a very concentrated audience that's rabid over what you're talking about, which build trust and credibility and authority. And then it's the book and being in their forum and getting visibility with them. And then they give you like a pathway to create a product that they kind of gave you like a business in a box in a way. I mean, obviously you had to execute, but they gave you the highway to be able to do that. And that's pretty cool. And then it led to an exit, which, by the way, I probably, if I got a message like that off LinkedIn, I think it was a scam, but but it is cool that it actually turned out to be a real deal. Can you take me through what was the exit like in due diligence? Are there some lessons that you learned in due diligence? Like if you had to do it all over again, you might do it differently?
Yeah, absolutely. The due diligence process was quite interesting because Message Media is a large organization, a $1 billion company, and they're owned by a listed entity. So they have to do due diligence in quite a methodical way. And they told me afterwards that when they do acquisitions, it's normally in the tens of millions of dollar range. And I can't disclose the valuation, but it wasn't that much. That they basically did the same due diligence process that they would do for a business much larger than mine. So it meant that some of the things that they expected weren't there. And in some cases, that was maybe not a problem in that they didn't really expect it to be at the same stage. But some things, absolutely, I wish I had done differently. So one of the key issues was the difference between cash and accrual accounting. When I had started my business, I don't have a finance background. I don't really understand accrual accounting. I do now, but back then I didn't really get it. I felt that it obfuscated the true financial picture, and I really liked cash because I could see, okay, if it says that I made a profit, then I actually have cash in the account. Whereas with accrual, it isn't necessarily the case.
Right.
And I made decisions that were helpful for me in terms of cash flow. For example, I heavily promoted annual subscriptions over monthly subscriptions. I had a 40% discount on annual, which is well above what would normally be offered. But I did that just so I could actually fund development because I had 5 devs working on the project with me and I needed the cash up front. And I also offered lifetime licenses for the mobile app that I pre-sold. I knew that it was going to cost me $30,000 to do it, and I didn't have the cash available. So I pre-sold lifetime licenses. And it was great in that it allowed me to get to market, but it wasn't good when it came to the discussion of what is the actual sell price going to be, because the decision was to do it based on a multiple of revenue. And then originally, I thought it was going to be based on cash revenue, but they wanted to do it on accrual revenue because that's how they do their accounting. And there was quite a big variance. I think it was maybe a 30% variance between the cash picture and the accrual picture, which ended up, I mean, I got a price that I was very happy with. But if I had made decisions earlier on, I might have been able to do things differently and maybe gone down a route where I wasn't so aggressive with the annual discounts and maybe I didn't need to sell as many lifetime licenses.
Little side note, I can't tell you how many times I've signed up for something where it said like lifetime license. And then about 3 or 4 years later, they either just straight up say, hey, it's no longer lifetime and there's going to be a maintenance fee or something like that. Or they say, hey, we're bringing out a premium product and now you still have your basic product, but we're not going to improve it anymore. And if you get the premium product, you can upgrade to our monthly fee. And so lifetime licenses are kind of interesting to me because I think in theory they sound good from a consumer standpoint, but I think it's kind of a tough business model if the business that's offering them doesn't do it in a responsible way because they basically kill their chance for future revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how you can make it work really if it's a SaaS business because the ongoing costs, you can't afford to keep offering that forever.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one other thing in terms of due diligence, I read a little bit about you, and I believe you leveraged many of your 5-star customer reviews as part of your negotiation in the sale of business. Can you talk about that a little bit? How did you utilize that, that it would help the valuation?
It was something that Message Media was very impressed by, that the number of 5-star reviews we had was a lot higher than the other integrations that they had. So they have, for example, a Salesforce integration, a Shopify integration, and those integrations, even though they were pushing it really hard and they had dedicated customer success people trying to get reviews, they still only had about 30, whereas I had 120 5-star reviews and my rating was better than what they had. And that was something that showed that the product was well-loved, and it also showed them that I had something special in how I was getting those reviews. The secret, if you want to know, is that I would ask for reviews at a certain point during a customer troubleshooting session, that people would email me and say it's broken. And I have to be transparent that it was broken quite a lot. It wasn't a perfect product. It's still not a perfect product right now. But what the reason people continued to use it was because we were super responsive with our customer support. I initially was doing all the customer support myself, which was really tough because I'm in Australia and a lot of the customers are in the US. So I was waking up at 5 a.m. and trying to do screen shares with people. Eventually, I hired a guy in El Salvador who was my lifesaver because he was there during Eastern Standard Time looking after the customers. And we would help someone out, get on a screen share. Sometimes it wasn't even related to our app. We just helped them with general Zoho CRM configuration. And they'd feel good about that. And we'd ask them in that moment, could you leave a review to help us out? And that's how we were able to get quite a few reviews. It does make a big difference.
Yeah. Did you learn that intuitively, or did someone tell you, or did you read that somewhere?
Intuitively, I think that I could sense that people seemed happy after that experience. And
yeah,
that seemed like a good point.
That's the textbook. His textbook is, if you're going to ask for a review, try to do it at the highest point that a customer is at in your journey with them, because there's a certain euphoric feeling and that's when they're most likely to, you know, release the most energy about your product or service, because they're obviously very happy at that point. So it's interesting that intuitively you just kind of knew to do that. They were probably very relieved that they got great support and were able to move on again with whatever they were doing.
If you're a business owner feeling stuck in your business, overwhelmed, responsible for everything that happens, and working long hours, Tyler helps his clients develop processes, hire high-performing team members, and better understand their financial metrics and numbers to allow for a more predictable, less hands-on business. To schedule a free, no-pressure consultation, head to thinktyler.com and click the meeting button. Tyler would love to see if he can help you work on your business, not in your business. Schedule a consultation today at thinktyler.com. Think life, think success, think business.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to switch gears a little bit. So you've been diagnosed with ADHD and ASD, and I'm just curious, one, could you talk about that a little bit? And then two, how has being diagnosed with that, how has that impacted your approach to entrepreneurship and just business management in general?
I got diagnosed actually after the sale of Smooth Messenger, and it was something that makes a lot of my previous career make sense. The fact that I was fired from my first 6 jobs, and the fact that I always had about 3 businesses running at once, very hyperactive ADHD tendency, and the getting fired and the communication difficulties were really my autistic side in struggling with social interaction. And it's something that has had both positives and negatives. Like the starting multiple businesses is contrary to typical business advice, which is all about focusing on one thing. But I think for me, it actually worked because I experimented with a lot of different ideas. And it meant that because I kind of got bored with the ones that weren't getting any traction, but I had other ones that were getting traction and I was able to double down on them. Whereas I think other people might persevere on a business that isn't really going well for longer. So I think that's something that I continue to leverage, that I've always got a lot of ideas and I try and follow the great by choice mentality from Jim Collins of fire bullets then cannonballs, doing a lot of little things. And that keeps me interested from a novelty perspective. And it's also good in terms of not over investing in one thing. What I've changed, I guess, is probably on the autistic side, leaning into my discomfort around talking to people. For a long time in my businesses, I didn't hold synchronous meetings over video calls, even though most of my staff are offshore. I would typically do it via chat, which is actually, in some ways, it can be helpful with people who don't have good spoken English, but I think it meant that there weren't tight bonds that were formed and there were issues in performance management. And I've started now forcing myself to have regular meetings via video calls and seeing that it does make a big difference. And also with customers as well, not doing it all via email, doing more of the synchronous calls. So that's been my big learning and my overall experience since then.
Is doing this podcast a little bit of a push for you to kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone, or is this something you enjoy doing?
I don't mind doing it. I think in some ways it feels easier doing it in front of an audience than doing it one-on-one with people that I know.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. See, I'm exact opposite. I'm super comfortable one-on-one with people. Like, to me right now, this is one-on-one. Mm. I kind of block out. But if you put me in front of a room of people, I am just, or where I'm really cognizant of a lot of people, or even in a group setting where there's talking, I'm completely uncomfortable. I'm like, I feel like I'm kind of, it's too open. Like I need a one-on-one conversations. I feel like there's walls and you kind of know, you know, it's a controllable environment, I guess. So it's interesting that you're kind of feel almost the other way around.
Yeah, I did a lot of Toastmasters training. So I feel relatively comfortable with public speaking, but in some ways that public speaking feels less intimate than one-on-one or small groups. And that's something that I'm now focusing on.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. So it's good to learn about you. And I appreciate you sharing how you're dealing with challenges. And I'm actually surprised, I didn't know this about you, that you actually were diagnosed after the sale. I made an assumption that it was something you probably were aware of for many years.
Yeah, the autistic side I was aware of, and I had a pre-diagnosis 7 years ago. Ah, okay. But the ADHD side, I didn't really pick it. I thought that it was normal to have this obsessive interest with productivity and have all these different systems in order to keep me focused and on track. But it was me coming up with coping mechanisms to deal with my hyperactive and inattentive brain.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot of things going through your mind. It's probably a blessing and a curse. It's probably pretty cool that you come up with all these ideas. Mm. Hey, so you've got another business, Focus Bear, B-E-A-R, not B-E-A-R, Focus Bear. And can you tell us a little bit about what is that? What's your goal in that company and what do you see for it?
Focus Bear is an app that I basically built for myself upon learning about my neurotype. In fact, before I got diagnosed, even I built it because I was really struggling with two things. One was work-life balance. I was working until 9:30 p.m. at night and waking up at 5 a.m. and starting work right away. And it was getting to the point where it was really negatively impacting my health and my relationship with my wife. And I knew that I needed to change. And I knew that part of the issue was that I wasn't actually being that productive during the day, that I'd get distracted all the time. And I'd also not manage my energy well. I'd just be sitting at the computer for hours and then get into a big slump. So I wanted something that would stop me from working too much by actually cutting me off from my computer in the evening and also stop me from starting work before I'd done meditation and exercise. Because I find there's a big difference in the quality of my work and how effective I am if I begin the day with some habits like that. If I go for a run and if I meditate then I'm able to actually tackle the hard things. Whereas if I begin the day, as I often did in the past, with going into my emails and starting to fight fires, I just have a day where I'm all over the place the whole day and I keep working until late at night because I haven't actually tackled the hard tasks. So that's what we built with Focus Bear. It's a Mac app, Windows app, also on Android and iOS, where it blocks distractions. So if I try and go onto Facebook, it'll block it. If I go to a news website, it'll block it. And also email, which I do need to access at some times, but certainly not first thing in the morning and not in the evening when I'm meant to be winding down and getting ready for sleep. So instead, it basically asks me to go through my morning routine, which for me is 2 hours long, including meditation, exercise, doing some book writing, some blog posts, things like that. Most people don't want to do a 2-hour morning routine, but you can customize it. And then it does break reminders during the day and helps you to switch off in the evening.
So the app has to be, I would assume, has to be open. And as long as it's open, then it's doing this blocking of all the stuff. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. For me, it's in the most intense strict mode where I can't deactivate it without a password in the evening.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, what just prevents you from just shutting it off? Because I hate to say that, that's probably what I would do in, you know, if something came up or some reason. So you actually have to password protect it. But you must know the password, right?
I don't know the password. No. My wife has the password. So if I want to work in the evening, I have to convince her that it is actually necessary. And if something's wrong, that's fine. She'll understand. But I'm trying to work on my relationship with her, and that involves spending quality time. If I'm working in the evening, that's counter to that.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. What a cool, it's an interesting, I'll have to play around with that. Now, do you envision this as someone with, could this be for anyone? It sounds like it could just really be for anyone, because even me, I have trouble focusing and I don't necessarily have a diagnosis. It's just sometimes I just go down rabbit trails. So it really could apply to anyone. Is that how you're designing it?
Yeah. My view on it is that people with a formal diagnosis of ADHD are canaries in the coal mine, that we've got a digital world where we've got Facebook and Instagram and these large corporations that are monetizing our eyeballs, and therefore they're trying to create clickbaity headlines and creating a technology world where it's very hard to actually do the things that we want to do. And this is a way of fighting back against those big corp surveillance capitalism, distraction-inducing technology, being able to actually figure out what do you want to achieve with your time and being very concentrated during your working hours.
Yeah. I always chuckle when they come up with the apps that they're going to show you how much time you've been doing this, or YouTube has something where they'll send you a warning that says, hey, you've spent more time than you said you were. It's the cynical side of me. It's like, I know you really don't want me to stop. I know you're sending me these warnings, but you don't want me to stop. Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know, that's their model. Consumption is kind of their model. So it's cool that there's a tool. Where do you envision, like, is this a type of product where you could, what's the market demographics for it? Like, has this got some explosive growth potential in your mind?
Yeah, ADHD is actually one of the biggest growth segments that I've seen, in that there's a very high rate of diagnosis happening at the moment. The number of adults diagnosed with ADHD doubled between 2020 and 2022, for example, because especially amongst women in the past were not frequently diagnosed because the diagnostic criteria didn't really focus on the inattentive side of ADHD, which is harder to pick up. It was more about the young boy who was hyperactive and acting out in school, whereas it doesn't always show up that way. And that's now, it's basically nearly 50-50 in terms of men and women diagnosis rates. So it's quite a large market. 5% of the population have been formally diagnosed with ADHD. And then, like you said, that is applicable for other people as well.
So what would you say, I mean, what are we talking market size? Any idea?
I've done some calculations in terms of looking at the overall productivity market, which is a $73 billion industry. Obviously, can't get all of that market. But if we take, I think for Focus Bear, it's built by someone who's autistic and ADHD. So it's sort of a subset there that it appeals mostly to people like me. And we're looking at 2.8% of the population there. And then I'm subsetting it by 50% then, because we've got many of those people are not employed. Autistic people are really chronically underemployed due to some of the issues that I faced. So it's, when I run the numbers, it's basically 1.4% of the overall productivity market works out to be about a $1 billion market. So even though it's appealing to a small subset, it's still a large market overall. And I'm seeing other ADHD focused apps, like there's Motion, there's Llama Life, there's Shimmer. They've all recently raised quite a lot of money. For example, Motion, which is this calendar scheduling app designed for people with ADHD, they raised, I believe, $10 million recently, and they've got 50,000 customers using it. So I'd say a market that is relatively meaningful, even if it seems a bit niche.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is interesting. Do you see yourself, like, will you take investment capital if someone comes along? Would that make sense for you?
Yeah, I am looking at it for Focus Fair because it's more of a capital intensive business than Smooth Messenger was, in that doing all the different platforms, Mac, Windows, iPhone and Android, it's a lot of devs required for that. So I'm actively exploring that at the moment.
It's kind of fascinating, and this is a little bit before your time. You know, really, Windows was dominant for a period of time, and it was almost the only platform. Maybe you could say Mac, but a lot of apps weren't really even being made for Mac before, you know, the App Store existed. And Windows was like the primary thing. So you had developers just all developing on Windows. And now it's like we've gone, and prior to that, there were like multiple platforms. And now it's like we've gone kind of backwards again, if you will. I don't know if backwards is the right word, but now you have all these platforms again, and it doesn't seem like it's really like going to go away. It seems like there's, if anything, there might even be more platforms. It's kind of, it's hard to believe that a business has to have, like, you know, maybe 4, 6, 7 different platforms. Does the coding nowadays, where it overlaps a lot, or are they completely unique in the way you have to design each one? Do you know?
It can be done in a way that it's the same app for each of the platforms. Using, for example, React Native, which allows you to develop on all of the mobile platforms, and you can also repurpose it for desktop as well. We've decided to go down a more bespoke path where we have a React Native app, which the core of it is the same for both Android and iOS, but the blocking part of it is quite different. So on Android, we have to essentially do hacky things where when you open an app, we're checking which apps are running, and then we minimize the app. Whereas on iPhone, Apple has actually built a framework which is a bit like parental controls for adults, the screen time feature. So we're able to tap into that. And then the same thing for Mac and Windows, that we've done native code there because it's very operating system specific in terms of blocking apps. But for other apps, it wouldn't be necessary. For a standard app, you could have the same code that would apply for each of the platforms.
Yeah. Let's say an investor comes along, and I could imagine an investor asking this. They say, hey, you know, this is cool. We're a little worried you might find something else that's more interesting to you and not stay focused on the business. What would be your response to that?
My response would be that if I look at my track record, I haven't tended to do that once I start seeing traction with a business. And indeed, I've been very focused on Focus there for the last 2 years that I've poured a lot of my own money and a lot of my own time into it, and I'm really passionate about it. And it's something that I can't see myself getting bored of. I'm constantly having new ideas and enjoy talking to the customers.
That's an awesome answer. And to boot, you've already exited one company that you were able to see all the way through. So you kind of have that win under your belt too. That's cool. I love your story, man. You got a really cool story. I think you're just destined to do something really great there, I have a feeling.
Thanks, Tyler.
It's just a matter of time. So, hey, that's really it on my end. So your website, and I'll put this in the show notes, of course, focusbear.io is the website. It'll go into the show notes. If people wanted to reach out to you, other than your main website, is there anywhere else that you'd want them to go?
LinkedIn is a good way to connect with me. Jeremy Nagel on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I will share the link.
Does cash flow have you down? Profit not where you think it should be? Maybe it's the long hours. Let's meet to see if I can help. I bridge driving the financial performance of your business to hit growth and success targets. Book a complimentary meeting at meetforgrowth.com to get started now. Once again, that's meetforgrowth.com.
I look forward to talking with you. And thanks for listening to the show.
LinkedIn is a good way to connect with me. Jeremy Nagel on LinkedIn. I'll share the link.
I'll put that in the show notes too. Jeremy Nagel is the extension on LinkedIn, right? Mm. Beautiful. Well, hey, man, thanks so much for being on the show. You're fun to talk to. You got a lot of ideas, hopefully. Sounds like you're working on a book. So maybe when you've got your book published, we could have another conversation.
Right. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you. Have a good one.
That's all for this episode of Think Business with Tyler. But we have plenty more resources to help you in your pursuit of business excellence on our website at thinktyler.com. If you'd like to be featured in a future episode of the show, feel free to reach out to us on social media at think_Tyler. We look forward to helping you think life, think success, and think business.
Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electric acid. Electric acid.